Welcome to Field Edition of Software Gone Wild. Yet again in sunny Zurich. Yeah, you guys are lucky with the weather this summer. With me today is Lauren Van Bever from Technical University of Zurich. But you aren't Swiss, are you?
I'm not Swiss, I'm Belgian. I'm from Brussels originally, yes.
So what brought you to Zurich?
I'm here in Zurich since January 2015. I'm basically now an assistant professor here at ETH, which is the Technical University of Zurich. And this is what brought me here, basically.
Visiting or permanently here?
So the idea of the position is that it's a permanent position or eventually will be permanent. So I'm not thinking of leaving anytime soon. So yeah, so permanently, I would say.
So you're as in love with Switzerland as I am.
I never went to Zurich before. I actually started to work here, besides just skiing in the French part of Switzerland. So, but yeah, right now I'm pretty much becoming in love with the country. And it's quite amazing around here.
Definitely. Oh, yeah, it is.
Yes.
Dear listeners, if you've never been to Switzerland, fix that.
Yes, correct. Definitely. You should pay us a visit.
Absolutely. And in Belgium, you were working in that crazy team that has all that weird ideas about networking at University of Leuven, right?
Yeah, correct. So I did my PhD in Louvain-la-Neuve, so in the University of Louvain. I was advised by Olivier Bonaventure, and I indeed worked on IP routing over there. And my thesis was basically how you can reconfigure a network without creating disruption. So we realized that people were basically not really knowing what they were doing when they wanted to go to A to B.
Oh, that was that crazy article, how you have to slowly change costs in ISIS or OSPF.
It's part of this thread of work. That specific article was not written by me, but it's in the same idea. Except that we were not looking at changing cost, we're looking at more crazy reconfiguration, like going from a flat OSPF to areas in OSPF, or like from an IBGP full mesh to IBGP route reflection. How do you do that in a way that doesn't create disruption again? So that's what my thesis was all about. And after Louvain, my PhD in Belgium, I started to work in the US for 2 years with Jennifer Rexford, and I worked at Princeton on software-defined networking. That's actually how I went into that area over there.
So you were also involved in that other crazy article that proved that under really crazy conditions, BGP route reflectors could generate permanent routing loops.
Yes, correct. So that's I'm the culprit for this one. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So that's part of the thesis, was to show that when you change something in BGP, you can basically create like oscillations, you can create black holes, you can induce forwarding loops. And so I was part of that, indeed.
So the conclusion of that article was don't use IBGP, use EBGP, right?
Not really.
Yeah, I know.
Yes, I guess you are joking a bit. The conclusion was, as everything in BGP is really hard, so whenever you want to change something in BGP, one of the problems is that you don't really know what will be the impact of a local change. So this is the problem. So if you change something here on one router, you can have impact on the other end of the network, because now that router stops advertising the route that was used by the previous guy. And now that guy starts using another route that induces an oscillation, for instance, in the entire network. And the protocol is so hard because of the policies that it's makes it very hard to reason from an algorithmic point of view. And so the conclusion basically of the article is that you should kind of do try to do like ships in the night with BGP, which is harder than with OSPF, for instance. And that's what we were basically explaining, is how to do it in this paper by using like a nasty trick with VERF. Like two BGP processes and different configurations for the two processes, and how you can shift from one to the other, and then we were able to show that it's correct. You can do that, but it has trade-off, obviously.
So in that case, you would like run two different topologies.
Yes.
and they would be in parallel, and only one would be used for forwarding.
Correct. Yes. So you would do exactly that. You will have two control planes, and you will have like two data planes in different verve.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the edge, you would like start mapping the traffic from one verve to another, and then you would use encapsulation like MPLS labels inside the network to pick the data plane that you use.
Oh, so you need path to the egress points to
yes,
make it
correct.
Work well.
Yes. For yeah. like so that's basically the trade-off, you're right, that if you want really to work all the time, which is usually the case in an academic paper, you want a solution that works all the time, which
of
is
course.
General enough,
mm-hmm.
then you need this.
Mm-hmm.
We have also in the paper, we describe other cases where, for instance, you have some conditions on the topology that makes it possible then to avoid duplicating everything. And then you can still do an ordering, for instance, of the configuration operation. But it's not general anymore. We need assumptions on how the network looks like, or, for instance, whether you use like route reflection and where do you place the route reflectors and these kind of things. So it's becoming a bit more specific, I would say.
So the conclusion of that article is, whatever is the question, MPLS is the solution.
I'm not
joking again.
Yes, you're joking again. I think MPLS is actually quite fine as a data plane. It's
even
pretty good, I would say. I don't have anything against the data plane of MPLS. I guess the control plane of MPLS is a bit more messy. So that's where the problem is, in my opinion. But I have nothing against the data plane. And if you can figure out a way to throw away the control plane in some fashion, then I think MPLS is a good solution indeed.
So you just described segment routing, I guess.
Yes. So segment routing is a very interesting technology. And actually, fibbing is kind of a competitor, should I say, to segment routing, but in a way that is retro compatible with any equipment out there that supports OSPF. So segment routing is definitely a good technology from that point of view, and I think it makes a lot of sense in current grid networks, definitely, yes.
So thank you for bringing us back on track.
Yes.
So you were at Princeton and you were working on SDN.
Yes.
What was that? What were you doing there?
Yes, so I worked on multiple projects over there. The main one I looked at is how to bring SDN in the internet. So, so as you know, most of the SDN initiatives these days are looking at how to bring SDN within a network, and for instance, within a data center, within a cellular core network, but. And obviously it's very hard, so people have not really looked at how can we bring SDN to improve BGP, for instance. And so the question that we're facing is how do you deploy SDN in a network composed of 50,000 subnetwork or autonomous system or ASs? So the answer is obviously you don't do that. Instead, you try to find like sweet spot in the internet where deploying SDN would really give a lot of incentive and like creates ripple effect in the entire network. And it turned out that IXP, so Internet Exchange Points, are pretty good locations to deploy SDN if you think about it. So IXPs are basically layer 2 switch fabric, huge fabric, but very simple in terms of actually forwarding. There is no routing. It's pure layer 2. And they are quite open to innovation.
Mm-hmm.
This is a nice thing about them. And the reason why is that they are like so tiny. At least for the European ones, they are like managing 4 terabits of traffic with maybe 10 engineers or less. So they must innovate all the time to keep up. And so they are really open for innovation. So, and we found that they were like a good audience to mm-hmm. maybe deploy SDN out there. And so what we did in the project, which is called the SDX, which stands for Software Defined
Exchange,
correct?
Like voice exchange?
Yes, correct. So the idea there is to basically solve the pain points of BGP policies at the mm-hmm. edge using SDN. So to give you a simple example, one of the very hard thing to do when you're an operator is to configure inbound traffic engineering with BGP.
Mm-hmm.
So there you have like a router connected to, with multiple links or multiple routers, and you want part of the traffic to be received on one of them, one link on one router, for instance. And the issue is that IP forwarding is destination based, right? So the decision of where the traffic will enter in your network is not yours. It's your neighbor's, basically. And the only thing you can do is play kind of nasty trick with BGP in order to influence that decision somehow. So you can start prepending. You can start playing with the med if your neighbor agrees, or you can start doing some even nastier stuff, which is to deaggregate and start sending more specific prefixes,
which is what everyone is doing,
which is why we have another problem in the internet right now, is that we have 560,000 prefixes in the routing and forwarding table, which creates like scalability challenges.
Yes.
So that's what everybody is doing. I think it's not the right way, obviously, that if someone, I don't know, here in Switzerland wants to receive some traffic for 266 addresses on the right link, that the entire planet should know about the /24 for doing this. So that's what people are doing. It's not the right way, we think. And so we were thinking, okay, could SDN help basically over there? And so the idea that we had is that we basically augment like the classical route server plus a layer 2 fabric with basically an SDN enabled data plane and a controller.
So you would use an IXP structure with a route server.
Yes, so we don't change this. So we want it to be completely transparent to current IXP technologies. So people still use BGP to peer with a route server. And it just turns out now that they can also do SDN policy in the fabric if they want to. They're not forced to do it, obviously. But if they want to, they can, for instance, say, I would like to receive the traffic for my /24 for maybe port 80. I would like to receive this on this particular port, which is connected to my router, which has maybe a middle box connected to it. So that I can start looking at HTTP traffic over there. Or I can just do load balancing and saying, okay, I would like all the traffic for which the source IP starts with a 0 to be received on my left router, and for which the source IP starts with 1 to be received on my right router. And you could say that to the SDN controller, which is running also in the fabric.
So you're not modifying the route server per se.
No, we're not changing anything in the route server. It's really perfectly compatible with BGP. You wouldn't see anything different. It's just that we also have now the capability of pushing SDN rules in the fabric and without really requiring a BGP trick in order to have the rules that does what you want.
Are you using BGP flow spec for that?
You could use BGP flow spec. We get that question a lot, actually. Mm-hmm. So that's perfect.
That would be the obvious
That would be the obvious thing to do, maybe. So first of all, you would need the participants at the XP to enable flow spec and to support it on their edge router.
Or you do it in the core.
Then on the route server, you would do it.
Yes.
But the problem is that the route server is transparent to forwarding, right? It does not participate.
True. You have to have a gateway between BGP flow spec and something.
Yes. And the issue there is that if you look at like the traffic that AMP6 is carrying today, it's like 4 terabits per second. Mm-hmm. And so putting someone in the middle of that amount of traffic is really hard. So it has to be
done in hardware.
Yeah, but even you have to do it in hardware, but you have to basically also support it with flow spec in this case on top of hardware.
Yeah.
And so that was something we also didn't really want. And also you can do stuff in flow spec, but for instance, if you want to implement an inbound traffic engineering policy with flow spec, and as I say, you just want when the source IP starts with 0, you go left, otherwise you go right. You will have to send this to all the participants at the IXP for them to implement that policies. So if you think about it, you have like 700 participants now in the large IXP in Amsterdam, for instance, and in Frankfurt in DKIX at the same. So you would have to send this route map to 700 people for them to implement it. And you're not even sure that they support flow spec on their router.
So they probably don't.
And they probably don't. So, yeah. So this is why we basically went for like just implement one rule in the data plane, in hardware, as you mentioned, and put it in the middle, and then change the next step according to this.
Yeah, the problem with running flow spec between participants would also be, do I trust you?
Exactly, yes, of course.
And will you crash my TCAM?
Yes, and here, that's a very good point, actually. That's something that we check, actually. Obviously, we don't let, for instance, Facebook drop the traffic for Google or vice versa. So we have this concept of reference monitor, and we can actually check, for instance, that if you want to drop some traffic, that you actually own the prefix that you want to drop, for instance. And we can use like the BGP database for doing this, for instance, or even certificates.
You don't have to go into the official routing databases. You can just check the BGP table.
So you would have to go actually into the BGP database to check.
Into the RADB. You would go into the BGP RIP on the server.
Yes. So that's a very good point. Again, that's something that we indeed do, is that if I'm, for instance, let's say I'm writing this policy, which is match destination port 80 forward to even. Mm-hmm. So if I'm just pushing this in the fabric, all the traffic that is destined to port 80 will start flowing to you.
But let's say
you're not good, right? Yeah. Because you only advertise one prefix, let's say. You advertise 10/24. And now I have a packet for 11/24 that arrives at the fabric for port 80 and forward it to you. So that's not good. And so what we actually realized, and a lot of things that we did in this paper, is how to combine the BGP state with the SDN state. So I have this policy, forward 80, forward to even, match 80, forward to even, and have your BGP state, which is you can reach prefix 10/24. And so we actually combine the two together, and this is what we put in the fabric. So we would have at the end match 10/24 and destination port 80 forward to even. And this is where basically the research challenges appear, is that BGP state is insanely high, it's insanely big, and it's extremely dynamic as well. So it moves all the time. And so from a scalability challenges, it creates problems. So this is where we spend a lot of time optimizing this part in order to avoid pushing rules, matching prefixes in the fabric.
Yeah, because the switches in the fabric are still from the 21st millennium.
Exactly, correct. Yeah. So they would support maybe, I don't know, 5,000 rules or 10,000 rules.
And not then
they
that would, many.
Yeah. It's a few thousands, and
yeah,
then they would
exactly.
Yes. And so what we actually use to solve this issue is we did a trick again. So I'm doing a lot of tricks in my research, and this is one of them, is to push back all the IP information to the edge, to the routers where they belong, actually. Mm-hmm. So here the trick that we use is that we start playing with the next stop information.
That was exactly what I wanted to
yes,
ask.
Yes, of course.
So you're matching on destination MAC and not on destination prefix.
Exactly, yes. So this is how we can group prefixes together and actually scale the fabric. Is that if you have, let's say, to get back to my previous example, right? Let's say now that you are advertising 10,000 prefixes. P1 to P10,000. So instead of having in my data plane a match on P1 to P10,000, I can just actually hack the next stop. And I would create a new next stop, which is even next stop. And that would actually be that groups, if you want. It's a tag, as we discussed about MPLS before, right? It's a tag that match your 10,000 prefixes. And in the data plane, I would say match this MAC address, which is actually attached to this next sub using ARP, and match port 80 and then forward to a given port. And by using this actually simple trick, we can scale the IXP fabric, because we don't need to match on IP prefixes anymore. We match on MAC addresses, and we use this ARP proxy in order to convert prefixes.
So the destination MAC address actually becomes your MPLS label.
So in a sense, that's perfectly right. So we needed a label of some sort, a way to group prefixes together and to match on a group of prefixes.
Well, it becomes FAC ID.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Yes. And so we happen to use the ARP and the MAC address as tag. But if you have something else like MPLS, you could also use MPLS labels instead. So it's just the idea of grouping prefixes together that is like the enabler. The technology is actually not really relevant in this case. At least for me.
And now that you mention MPLS, you actually wouldn't have to run MPLS with the participants on the IXP.
You wouldn't. So if you would like to use MPLS, I guess you would need like edge equipments that would slap an MPLS label on top of it. And you can definitely do that. As far as I know, actually, like IXPs are already using MPLS.
Yes, they are.
So it's actually like a layer two VPN that they're running. That happens to look like a switch to participants, but they want to use MPLS for traffic engineering, obviously.
Yes.
So it's already MPLS enabled. So we could leverage already the MPLS support over there directly. Yes.
So did this stay at the level of an academic project or did it move forward?
It is moving forward right now. Mm-hmm. So we hope it will not stay at the level of an academic project. We have people interested in deploying it, like large IXPs actually are looking at SDN right now. We have already deployments in the US for like research networks. So there is the ESNet network, which is kind of the géant of the US.
And Géant is?
And the Géant is, okay, good question.
Is ESNet of Europe.
Yes, okay. Like to avoid the infinite recursion, like Géant is the research network that connects all the universities and research centers in Europe. Mm-hmm. So it's famous for connecting CERN to the entire globe. So it has an extremely good connectivity. And ESNet is the equivalent in the US, and the two are connected together. And so we have actually those guys are running the SDX platform. And even funny or a bit scary actually is the fact that now the NSA in the US has publicly announced that they're also deploying SDX within the network. And so they basically are interested to use SDX to interconnect the different agencies together. So that's
and like, divert the traffic on as needed basis.
And they wanted the traffic to be SDN based. Yes,
For whatever unimaginable reason.
Exactly. Yeah. Correct. So that's also something that that I'm interested in is how can you still guarantee obviously the privacy, and like prevent like wiretapping when you have SDN devices in the middle. But that's another.
Well, you can't. Period.
If you cannot assume that anything is trusted, then I'm afraid the answer is yes.
Yeah. Now, if you own the fabric.
Yes.
There's nothing you can do.
No. Yeah. Nothing that is performant. You can start doing nasty stuff again, like random routing and like obfuscation, actually. But this is always like trying to circumvent the attacker rather than really solving the issue. I agree. Yeah. So this is something to be aware of, but, that's actually something interesting, and I get this a lot. Whenever you try to improve something in network management, you always get this kind of knee-jerk reaction sometimes that, but this can be used in order to do wiretapping more easily, for instance.
Of course.
Yes. And so, but I think this is a wrong argument, right? So the fact that you want to improve the way the networks are managed, And this should not be used necessarily as an attacker. I mean, you don't want the statu quo just to prevent an attack. This is anyway a bad protection because it's just security by obfuscation. And we know this is not very good. So this would be my answer against the
security. But this is like the argument, well, we shouldn't make sharper knives because we can kill someone.
Exactly. Yes. Yes.
Well, and then the chefs would hate you.
Correct. Correct. This can be used in networking as well, obviously. Yeah.
So is this now available as open source software that I could just take and pull down and start playing with?
Yes, that's true. We have a website. Maybe we can, I guess we'll list it among the resources of the podcast. We have a website with a virtual machine that anyone can download and play with. So right now we have like, we use, We have support for two route servers. So I mentioned we need to integrate with BGP. So we support both ExaBGP and BERT as a route server. And we run, the SDN controller is based on Ryu, which is, one of the moving SDN controllers these days. So people can download it. We have tutorial actually. So the SDX project has been featured also in the Coursera course. It has been used by thousands of people, actually, through students. So it's definitely, they are running code. It's not like an academic project with just a paper.
And, so it's not just a two-column article.
It's a two-column article and other things. It's not just the article, yes. And the code is still maintained and very much active. As I say, we really want people to use it. It's not just a dead project.
And by the way, why did you decide to use the Ryu controller?
So we went first for an academic controller, or more academic controller, and we experienced problems with scalability in terms of like the time it took to compute the forwarding rules and download them in the forwarding plane. And so we basically went controller shopping in a sense, and we realized that a lot of people were using Ryu. And the fact that it supported OpenFlow 1.3 out of the box was a big, big advantage. And, it's Python based as well. So it's quite easy to code with. And so that was the reasons. And, we got nice feedback after this choice that people were happy that we went to Ryu in this case.
So you're allowing the controller to do the calculation of the forwarding paths, or are you just using it to push the flow entries into the network?
So the policies, right? So the forwarding policies are defined by the participants. So you, me, Facebook, Google connected to the IXP. And they basically, in the current version, they give that to the controller. And the role of the controller is to smoosh down all the policies together and end up with forwarding rules to download in the fabric.
Yeah, but that's not the controller. That's your code.
That's the code within the controller. Yes. So the controller
is like a library within the controller.
Yes, correct. So we basically leverage Ryu code to obviously interact with OpenFlow switches in this case, but we could use other SDN interface. There is nothing OpenFlow specific really. And we just add code in order to compose policies together. That's where the difficulty is, and that we solved that difficulty is that if I have a policy for the traffic that I send to the fabric, and you have a policy for the traffic that you receive from the fabric, if I send traffic to you, we need to compose the two policies together.
Yes.
And that's what the controller is doing for us. We have a library. The code is online. Anyone can see how it works.
How do you avoid the Cartesian product problem?
Very good point. We avoid it actually by, so there are multiple solutions to that.
Oh, by the way, let's explain this to the
correct
audience first.
Yes.
Okay, you do it.
Okay, thank you. So the Cartesian product appears that, so let's say I want to forward traffic to you and you want to do something with the traffic you receive from me. We basically have to compose my policy with yours. So if I'm matching, let's say on IP address 1 and IP address 2, and I forward these to you, and then you match on port 1 and port 2. So we have to do the cross product, which would give match IP 1, port 1, port 2, match IP 2, port 1, port 2. So you can see that my rules add two clauses, match IP 1, match IP 2. Your rules add also two clauses, match port 1, match port 2. When we do the cross product, we end up with the product of the two, and then we have four rules in the data plane. So that's the prime of the cross product is this multiplication of rules. When you have 700 participants, hundreds of policies, that obviously can blow up pretty quickly.
Yes.
And the trick actually is pretty simple. It's, either you can use multiple tables to avoid the cross product. And then I would have one table. Let's say we have only one switch in the fabric. I would have a switch with two tables that are put in sequence. In the first table, I would say match IP1, IP2. I set the tag. And then in the second table, I would match on the tag port 1, port 2, for instance. And now I end up in a switch with two tables and two rules per table. So I don't duplicate the rules anymore. That's solution one. If your switch does not support multiple tables, you can obviously do the trick that you have multiple switches. And actually most of the IXP, they have multiple switches. And so you can have like the edge switch doing like the outbound or inbound policy of the people connected to it and vice versa on the other side. And then you avoid the cross product in this case.
Yeah, but if you want traffic to port 80 to go to one switch,
yep,
and all other traffic to go to another switch because I want to be connected to two switches for redundancy reasons, it means that the split has to be done before the egress policy on the egress switch.
Yes, correct. Yeah, correct. So you cannot always split everything.
Yeah.
You're right. So there are like policies for which you will have to put stuff together in the same table and do the cross product. The point though is that you don't want to do that for all the policies. So you want to limit the amount of cross product. And the good thing is that people don't have to really compute that by themselves. The controller is doing that for them. But you're perfectly correct. Sometimes you have to cross product. There is no way out.
So your controller is like an optimizing compiler.
That's a good view. I think that's correct. We basically compile down policies and we optimize the encoding in the data plane. Mm-hmm. And by using this trick of using the virtual next step, so the next step trick, as we discussed before, and also we use this other optimization about multiple tables and the placement of the rows in the first place.
By the way, does anyone support multiple TCAM tables these days?
I'm not sure, actually. I think the answer is yes, that there are a bunch of SDN hardware provider now which support multiple TCAM. The thing, though, to keep in mind is that not all TCAMs are created equal.
Of course.
And so when a vendor basically claims that it supports multiple table, you should always look what match action are available in each table. And most of the time you will see that, for instance, you cannot match on some fields because it happens that there is no TCAM that can match on that field.
Yeah. What I've seen so far, and I think it was only HP, mm-hmm. And I have to admit, I don't go into what startups are doing because they usually don't even publish documentation,
yeah.
So I couldn't be bothered.
Yeah.
So what HP is doing, the first table is TCAM table, mm-hmm. And the second table is layer 2, layer 3 table.
Yeah.
So in the first table, you can match on anything. The second table, you can make on destination MAC or destination IP.
Yeah. So the important thing for your audience would be to remember then to also look at the number of rows that they can do in the TCAM.
Oh, absolutely.
And then in the layer 2 or layer 3. So usually layer 2, layer 3 is pretty big, but TCAM is always very tiny. So
yeah,
if you want to do a few thousand
entries.
Yes. So it's always the same issue. If you want to do a lot of crazy match action, you really need to take a look at this part of the spec. Naming specific vendor, I'm afraid I cannot do it.
Of course, understood.
But that's my advice, would be to look at the spec closely. Yeah.
And some vendors, by the way, are honest enough to publish the specs, and HP is among them. Mm-hmm. And there are some other vendors that just say, well, yeah, we support stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
By the way, what do you do when you run out of TCAM?
Okay, I think you got me here. That's something we actually didn't really look at, I must say, right now. And the reason why is that our encoding were actually pretty good, so that we were always within 10,000 entries, mm-hmm. which for us was the goal. Now, I guess if you run out of TCAM, what I would do is I would, again, look at how you can distribute the rules over the fabric in a better way. So right now, that's something that we were actually not doing. So we were splitting the rules, as I mentioned before, into multiple tables and multiple switches. But we didn't try to optimize even further into which switches. So if you have, let's say, 3 switches in a row, you can actually put rules for a flow crossing the 3 switches. You can actually put the rules anywhere on the 3. So you could, if the first switch is running out of TCAM, you could basically do a default action to forward to the second switch and then do a match, an actual match over there. So the price to pay there is that you basically can increase a bit, you can inflate the length of the pass by doing mm-hmm. this. That's the price to pay, right? So if you cannot afford to have bigger TCAM, you can still use this. I think this trick has been used before. Also for scaling the forwarding table on the routers mm-hmm. in a project that was called Viagre, making router last longer. And the trick there was to do exactly what I described. So you would have all the rules in your forwarding table, and then you will have 0/0 pointing to another router.
Oh, the virtual aggregation stuff.
Yes, the virtual aggregation.
Was that also coming from your university?
It was not from us, but mm-hmm. it could have been because it's...
Yeah,
it's
you guys do that crazy stuff like that.
Yes,
yeah.
We could have done it. Mm-hmm. I think that's fair to say. And I think you could use the same trick also in an SDN domain to do this. It has actually been done also in research work. So we could probably leverage the techniques over there. Yes.
Well, it's actually being done in production.
Okay. Even better.
I recorded a podcast with a guy from Spotify.
Okay.
And he's using an Arista switch as an internet edge router.
I see.
And what he's doing is, and guys, if you're interested, I did 2 podcasts with him, so go and listen to them. What he's doing is he is analyzing which prefixes get the most traffic.
Yep.
And then he installs those prefixes into the hardware fib.
Yep.
And uses the default route for like 0.1% of the traffic.
I see. Yeah.
He actually figured out that based on actual data, he hits more than 99.99% of the traffic.
Yeah, correct.
With a data center switch, which has, you know, a few tens of thousands of prefixes.
Yes, yes. Yeah, that's very famous that the traffic is very, very skewed. And so
yeah.
Only a tiny prefixes account for most of the traffic.
That's exactly.
Famous reason.
Spotify at a peering point in Europe sends almost no traffic to Fiji.
Correct, correct. Yeah. Yes.
So what switches would you recommend to use in this scenario? People who already have, okay, let's turn this around.
Yeah.
You said that people already have this in production.
Mm-hmm.
What gear are they using?
So, okay, that's a good point. So the deployment I was mentioning were smaller in size than obviously a super large IXP.
Of course.
So in this case, I think what they are using is Novi switch,
Mm-hmm.
Which is, I think, a startup, as you mentioned
yep.
before, which builds layer 3, OpenFlow 1.3 switches, enabled switches. And they do so using like a programmable TCAM. So that's at least what they are claiming in this case.
Is that Canadian startup?
Not sure. Maybe it is.
There was a startup from Canada that was using MPUs.
Yeah, that might be them.
Yeah, it was from EasyChip, I think.
Yeah, well, I would have to check.
And those people have like some crazy number of entries.
Yes. Yeah, they claim they can go up to 500,000 entries. And
oh, that's it.
Yeah. And then they carry like the internet routing table.
Actually. Yeah.
And so, I think what some people use. There is another actually IXP in New Zealand, which is run, as far as I know, by Google.
Oh, they use the Pika switch.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, Pika 8.
So they use Pika 8.
Yeah, and that guy wrote the Cardigan project, right?
Exactly,
yeah,
correct.
Yeah, yeah.
So
I have to speak to him once.
Yes, Cardigan is basically like, it's another SDX platform, really. Mm-hmm. It's the same kind of idea as we do. The difference, though, is that they end up pushing IP prefixes in the data plane.
Yeah, they have layer 3 forwarding in the
correct.
Fabric.
And so this is something we really want to avoid. And also, as far as I know, something else we do is that we basically let participants write policies, SDN policies, really. And as far as I know, Cardigan does not let participants write policies.
So. No, they solve the programming the data plane from BGP problem.
Correct, yes. But that's a good point that you raise. So Cardigan is another example of a running SDX actor in the wild, carrying traffic in New Zealand.
I think I was communicating with that guy once, and they're using that more as an in-country exchange point.
Mm-hmm.
So they would only exchange prefixes that originate in New Zealand, which brings the number of prefixes down to low thousands.
Yeah.
So a Trident 2 based chipset can easily do that if you program the tables correctly.
Yeah, that's true. Yes, true.
Yeah. And I know he has that in production for a few years now.
So it's definitely running, so it can be done. Definitely.
With certain caveats, yes.
Yes. Or as always.
Yeah. If people want to know more about this.
Yes.
We already mentioned the website.
Yes, we'll put a link of the website on the internet, and so there are a bunch of presentations. I gave a talk at RIPE about this, so they can also look at the videos. They can run the VM. There is a tutorial. They can actually play with the code and see how it works. It's basically based on Quagga for like a software router.
Mm-hmm.
And then we can connect up to Bird and, as I mentioned, Ryu. So everything is running and people can just play with the technology if they want to try. If they are even more interested and they would like to take it to the next step, they can obviously contact me and then we can see. And I would
be able to. So how do they do that?
They can go to my website, which is www.vanbever.eu. So it's VanBever. And my email address is over there.
Perfect. So thank you for this excellent introduction to SDN-based exchanges. Even though we didn't want to go down this path.
Correct.
This has been awesome.
Yes.
Thank you for this. And in the next podcast, we'll probably eventually get to fibbing.
I hope so.
And you've been listening to Software Gone Wild, the podcast talking about everything SDN-ish, even though it has to do with OpenFlow like today. Yeah, we survived OpenFlow. You want to know more about SDN, go to sdn.ipspace.net, where you'll find links to all sorts of SDN resources, like podcasts, webinars, videos, presentations, books. Just go there and explore. You want to follow me on my blog, go to blog.ipspace.net, or I'm at iOSHints on Twitter. And this podcast is based at podcast.ipspace.net. Go there, explore, subscribe, and enjoy.